It is. I think we better get started because we want to give Chris the appropriate amount of time. Thank you, Chris, for joining us. Many of you here know Chris, I think, already. Chris Pike. He is a postdoctoral fellow at the Taiwan Institute for Democracy. That's the name, right? Taiwan Institute for Democracy. In
Nation.
Taiwan Foundation for Democracy, working on religious freedom in China and Taiwan. He has done doctoral work on Christian history in China, and is a Free Methodist missionary who's been serving in Taiwan for a long time at as a chaplain at a school and as a pastor there. And he's presented here multiple times for us at the symposium. So we're thankful that he's able to join us again. Those of you who are joining us on Zoom, please remember to mute your microphones. And we will have time, though, at the end for Q&A, and you will be able to, if you want to, ask questions at that point. But for now, I will let Chris take it away with this presentation.
Okay, thank you so much, James. This is a real honor to be presenting. This is actually my fourth presentation at the Wesley Symposium. I was there at the first one in 2009 when James was just a young doctoral student, not the exalted chair of Wesley Studies that he is today. So I'm really happy to see where this has gone, and you've done a great job in leading this to where it's become. My focus today is going to be on a different part of the world than David Bundy talked about. I'm going to be talking about China, and I'm going to be talking about the last Methodist bishop to serve in China in the official capacity, a man named Chen Wenyuan. And you'll see his name is W.Y. Chen in a lot of the writing, but I'll call him Chen Wenyuan from his Chinese name. In the 1940s, he was an internationally recognized Christian leader, both in China and in the United States. But then in 1951, in the early People's Republic of China era, he was denounced and essentially erased from public life. So this person who was incredibly influential and incredibly well known was just removed from public life. And so when I was working on another project, I came across the story of Chen Wenyuan, and it really hadn't been developed at all. No one had really told this story. So I thought, if I ever get an opportunity to do that, I would love to spend some time and find out more about who this was and what happened to him, because that's important. And so we're going to take that journey today. So thanks for joining me on that. So just a note on names. In writings in English, he would be described as W.Y. Chen, but his Chinese name was Chen Wenyuan, and his the characters are there. He was known in 1944, this is the cover of Time magazine, as China's number one Protestant and the unofficial ambassador of Chiang Kai-shek, who was the president of China. So he was a very high-level person in 1944, and this was sort of at the zenith of his career. He did a speaking tour of the United States, which I'll talk about, and he was erased from public life. Well, how did that happen? Here he was born in 1897. I'm at the top of that little island on the right now in Taipei, but he was born in Fuzhou province, and when he was a young man, he described his religious ideas as coming from the doctrine of the mean, that he obeyed the words of Confucius, that you should respect gods and ghosts, but you should keep them at a distance. So at this young stage of life, he was from a Buddhist family, but he kept religious things at a distance. He didn't want to get too involved with them. But we know that his father and his mother cared for him very much. We don't know who they are. We don't even know who his wife was. But we know that his father was a magistrate, which is like a governor of an area. And he was wealthy enough that he allowed Chen Wenyuan to study at the Anglo-Chinese College in Fuzhou. And he started around maybe 1910, and he studied there until 1917. And this allowed him to be able to get a bicultural Chinese Western education. So he was able to learn the Confucian classics, but he was also able to learn English and study the Bible. But he was not a Christian. In fact, he was vehemently against Christianity. This is probably where the chapel that he attended in the Yinghua Chapel. But he was not a Christian until 1910, and he had a powerful conversion experience. He was originally very much against Christianity, didn't want any part of it, but he had a roommate who was the president of the YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association. And this roommate asked him to go and attend some street preaching he was doing. And so Chen Wenyuan agreed to go with him. And during the course of this street preaching, he found himself not actually engaging in Christian faith yet, but defending the Christian faith without actually believing it himself yet. But then he one night goes back to his room and he sees a picture of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, probably this picture. And he says that he has this powerful experience of the face of Christ beaming in the twilight. And it just revealed to him his deep need for Christ. And he said to his roommate, who thought he was losing his mind because he was so distraught, that it's all over now. I have found Jesus. So he has this powerful conversion experience in 1910, and his life moved in a different direction. It was probably this painting that he saw because it was so worldwide at that time. Well, he gets baptized in Fuzhou at the Church of Heavenly Peace into the Methodist Episcopal Church. And this is what it looks like today. It's still there. And he begins to track toward work and life into the Methodist Episcopal Church, which was one of the churches in China at the time. And due to his connection to the Methodist Episcopal Church in China and some of the bishops there, he was able to get a scholarship to study at Syracuse University in New York. So that was very rare for a Chinese student to be able to do. So he must have been an incredibly talented young man. And he studied there from 1917 to 1919. So this is the first known picture of Chen Wenyuan, and it's from the Syracuse University portrait collection. I kept pestering them, and they finally sent me a clippings file about Chen Wenyuan. This is the first known picture of him, probably around 21 years old. And that's when he was studying at Syracuse. And this is what it looked like at the time. And this is what Syracuse University looks like today. But because of his studies at Fuzhou Christian University, he was able to get his BA in 1918. So that's just 1 year after he started, probably because he had previous coursework in Fuzhou. And he did his master's degree at Syracuse in 1919, so just 1 year later. And his thesis was on the social value of vocational education in China. So he was always trying to figure out how he could use his Western education to benefit China. He returns to Fuzhou to pastor. So he goes back after 1919, and in 1920, he becomes the pastor of this church, the Fuzhou Institutional Church. And then after that, in 1923, the Fuzhou Student Church, which I'm not sure if that was an independent church or just the student body of the previous one. But then in 1926, he becomes the pastor of the Church of Heavenly Peace. And that's, as you remember, the church where he was baptized. And this was a very large church. It had seating for about 1,000 people. So it's the largest church in Fuzhou, and he is becoming a more and more influential figure. But he decides in 1927, through another opportunity that he gets, to go back to school, and he wants to get his PhD degree. So in 1927, he gets a scholarship from the Methodist Episcopal Church again. Some bishops in China worked it out so that he could go and finish his degree with the intention of coming back to China to become a professor. So he studies there for about 3 years, and this is where the School of Religion would have been at that time at Duke University. And he starts in the School of Religion. This is a picture from the yearbook at the time. There's Chen Wenyuan. And he's in the School of Religion. And he spends a lot of time in the United States, and he does a lot of preaching, and he does a lot of speaking around the country, and he learns a lot about Americans and how they think, and that will become very important in his later years, which I'll explain. During his time there, he was originally studying in the School of Religion, but there's an emerging program of psychology that's just starting at Duke. And he meets this professor, Frank Hickman, who was a professor there, started in 1927. And he wrote a book called Introduction to the Psychology of Religion. So this Department of Religion is working in tandem with the psychology department. And Chan Wenyuan becomes very interested in this, especially when this man, the famous psychologist William McDougall, comes to Duke from Harvard. And between McDougall and Hickman, they influenced Chan Wenyuan to consider thinking about religion from a psychological perspective. And so by the time he is graduating, he's migrated over to the School of Arts and Sciences. And he eventually gets his PhD in 1930 from the psychology department. And McDougall was his chief advisor. And Chan Wenyuan's dissertation was on a psychological interpretation of Chinese culture with special reference to its stability. And he thought that its stability was really focused on the idea of the doctrine of the mean, that there's everything will come back to a medium perspective. And he thought that that's what it was that gave China such great stability over this long thousands and thousands of year of history. And so that's what he wrote it on. And after he graduated, he goes to Cambridge and the University of Berlin to do postgraduate studies. So he's a very scholarly person, and he was able to learn German as well as English to a very high level. And he did those postgraduate studies. And then he comes back to China to become a professor at Fujian Christian University, which was not far from his home. And he served there from 1931 to 1936 as a professor, originally starting in the religion department, just like he did at Duke, eventually moving into psychology. And he built the psychology department from the ground up. This is a picture of what Fujian Christian University looked like during that time. And so it was a very interesting place because they had agricultural work happening. They were working on social reconstruction, which was so important in China. And they had these emerging departments of psychology and religion. It seemed like a very exciting place. And Chan Wenyuan was one of the professors there. This is the only known picture that I could find of his family. I don't know any of the names of his family except for one of his daughters who emigrated to the United States. But this is from the archives of Fujian Christian University. So I put it through Gemini to make it a little more seeable from a modern perspective. But this is what his family looked like. We don't know any of their names except for one of them. But he went from being a professor to the dean of the School of Arts, and he served for 1 year as the acting president. And he was really committed to providing resources to Chinese that didn't have the opportunities that he did. So he used all of his education and experience to write books like Religion and Personality in Chinese, Chinese National Character and Culture, and Christ and the New Youth in Chinese, so that people who didn't have his opportunities would be able to learn from what he was able to gain. And so he wrote at a very high level of psychological and religious analysis to benefit the Chinese world. Well, he also became a speaker for the YMCA and had the opportunity to tour the entire country. And when he did that, he developed a national reputation, so much so that the National Christian Council in 1936 elected to have him become the general secretary. So that's the highest position in the National Christian Council. So imagine all of the non-independent churches that were Protestant were rallied together in this National Christian Council, and he was elected to be the general secretary of it. So he's developing so much of a national figure that in 1936, he's listed in the Who's Who in China as the biography of Chinese leaders as this general secretary of the National Christian Council. So he's developing by this time a national profile. And at this time, he also begins to get to know Chiang Kai-shek, who, if you know your Chinese history, he was the leader at that time of the Kuomintang Party or the KMT, and is the president of China. And if you know your Chiang Kai-shek history, you'll know that he got married to a woman named Song Meiling, and his mother-in-law said, "The condition of marrying my daughter," because they were a very famous Methodist family, "was that you would genuinely investigate the claims of Christianity." And Chiang Kai-shek did that. And he became convinced of the reality of some of the spiritual things he was reading in the Bible and in its devotionals. And so this man, ZT Kuang or Jiang Changchuan, is his Chinese name, the pastor of the Allen Memorial Methodist Church in Shanghai, baptized Chiang Kai-shek in 1930 at a private ceremony. So this man, who's going to become important later in our story, acted as a spiritual mentor for Chiang Kai-shek. And it was really the Xi'an incident in 1936, in which some of Chiang Kai-shek's generals tried to kidnap him, and he was able to escape and came out of it with just a real heroic story. And he said that it was his Christian faith that really kept him through that period and allowed him to come out victorious, that Chen Wenyuan was really impressed. And he said that in his address to the National Christian Council, that the attitude of the people toward the central government had changed. Formerly it was negative, now it's positive, and instead of suspicion, they show faith. The Xi'an incident gave for General Chiang a nationwide sympathy and loyalty. And even those who formerly opposed him have changed their attitude. So Chen Wenyuan went from not being very impressed with Chiang Kai-shek and the KMT to being a close ally. And shortly thereafter, the Japanese invaded China in 1937, and things really changed quite a bit because the government moved largely from Shanghai and the eastern coast to the interior. And when they moved to the interior to Chongqing in Sichuan province, Chen Wenyuan moved with them to train youth. That was part of what he did, and he worked with Chiang Kai-shek there. So he becomes very closely intertwined with the Kuomintang Party. In 1941, the Methodist Church in China amalgamates. But formerly, it was the Methodist Episcopal Church and the Methodist Episcopal Church South. But in 1941, they amalgamate and they elect four bishops, two Americans and two Chinese. Chen Wenyuan was one of them, and the other was Jiang Changchuan, who we said was the mentor of Chiang Kai-shek. So you see on the right-hand side, and here's another picture of them. Chen Wenyuan is on the far right, and Jiang Changchuan is on the far left. So these four bishops, two Americans, two Chinese, in 1941, are now going to lead the church into the next phase of Methodist life. And during that time, Chen Wenyuan starts to develop a Western reputation. So you can see from this article in the Virginia Methodist Advocate, some of the writings that Chen Wenyuan wrote would start to get into American and Canadian and British newspapers. In 1943, there's a real effort to promote Chen Wenyuan's identity and the connection in the KMT with Christianity. And the reason some scholars think was that they were trying to get American support for them against the Chinese Communist Party, because they're getting through the war and they're coming out and they're going to have to fight the civil war, it seems like. And Chen Wenyuan baptized Chiang Kai-shek's son, and that made it into the newspapers right before Chen Wenyuan goes on a long speaking tour in the United States. And we see that he's shown in the New York Times and other sources that He has this national speaking tour and he's greeted by thousands of people. And this was put on by Henry Luce. And if you know the story of Henry Luce, the owner operator of Time magazine, Luce himself was the son of Protestant missionaries. And he was very interested in developing Christian missions, especially in Asia, and was interested in promoting the Chinese Christians within the KMT party. And so it was Luce from Time magazine who designated Chen Wenyuan as China's number one Protestant and the unofficial ambassador of Chiang Kai-shek. So you see that in the United States now, Chen Wenyuan's reputation is really starting to really get to a high level. And in the New York Times, they're reporting that Chen Wenyuan is giving a message from General Chiang Kai-shek, expressing the hope of the unity among the Allies would continue after the war, and that American missionaries in greater numbers would visit China to work as comrades with the Chinese people in the reconstruction of China. And Chen reported that the Christian movement is gaining momentum in China. So this is really what Americans would want to hear at the time. And so this was very welcome news. And again, his articles are being reported in Western newspapers, and his star goes so high that he's given six honorary doctorates from American universities between 1944 and 1947. So he's really becoming a national figure on both sides. These are the universities: Syracuse, Wesleyan, Boston, Illinois, Garrett, American University, all gave Chen Wenyuan honorary doctorates. And his star grows so high that he's even able to meet with Franklin Roosevelt, the American president, on August 24th, 1944. And the reason for that was that he was promoting Christianity, but he was also promoting the cause of the KMT in China, because they were in a battle for American support with the Chinese communists in order to win the civil war that was about to take place, and really in some places had already started. So when we enter into the Chinese Civil War, we see that this figure, Chen Wenyuan, is incredibly high level right now. China's number one Protestant and the unofficial ambassador of Chiang Kai-shek. So he was influential enough that he was on the list of the Constitutional Implementation Committee, meaning that he was part of the committee that wrote the initial constitution of the Republic of China in 1947. And here he is again in 1947 in Whitby, just a few kilometers away from Tyndale University. So he was here, or he was there, I should say, promoting the cause of the KMT in Canada. Well, as you know, the KMT lost the Civil War and the Chinese Communist Party won. And after that, a religious affairs bureau was established by the People's Republic of China in order to keep an eye and control Chinese Christians. And they created a Christian manifesto, which was written in order to recognize the history of imperialism in China by Western nations, and to try to break off the connection between Chinese Christians and Western Christians, particularly from the United States. And under pressure, two of the signatories were the Methodist bishops, Ziti Kuang and Chen Wenyuan. So they're now beginning to go under deep pressure. And in order to accelerate the process of cutting foreign ties, something called the denunciation movement was started. And what happened was that those who were willing to cooperate with the Religious Affairs Bureau and the Three Self Patriotic Movement were to accuse or denounce those Christians who were not willing to come over under the oversight of the Three Self, which is the controlling group for the Chinese Communist Party of Christians. And some people were scapegoated as sacrificial offerings by those who needed to prove their loyalty to the new government. And this is exactly what happened with our two Chinese bishops. So this was Chen Wenyuan around that time, around 1951. On the left is the original picture from his Wikipedia page, and the right, I put it through Google Gemini to update it. But The beginning of this started in April of 1951, where a standing committee was convened. And in 1951, there was a conference that was called in Beijing, about 154 people. And Jiang Tongtuan, or ZT Kuang, you see his picture on the left there, denounced his fellow Methodist bishop, Chen Wenyuan. And he said that the reasons for that were that he was a trainer of youth, he was part of the New Life movement, and he moved the KMT and the Chinese toward a pro-Americanism. And he also colluded with the imperialists, and he claimed to be the unofficial ambassador of Chiang Kai-shek, so much so that he called Chen Wenyuan an accomplice in the massacre of the Chinese people. He said that he's decided to reorganize the church with the spirit of sacrifice, and that people like Chen Wenyuan must be eliminated one by one and be thoroughly purged. So why did he do this? We'll get to that in just a minute. But this is the first stage of Chen Wenyuan's denouncement. The second stage was in a conference in Shanghai in June in 1951, and this was where 1,200 people attended. And this is H.H. Cui, Cui Qianxiang from the National Christian Council. So you remember, Chen Wenyuan has two roles. He's the general secretary of the National Christian Council, and he's a bishop in the Methodist Church. So previous slide, you saw that the Methodist Church has now denounced him. Now it's going to be the National Christian Council that's going to announce him. So they call him a running dog of the imperialists. And so they want to get rid of him. And then the final stage of his denouncement was in the Canindrome Stadium in Shanghai with a rally of 10,000 people. And again, this is Jiang Tongtuan who writes his denouncement, and he resolves that Chen Wenyuan must be punished as an American working for Chiang Kai-shek. And so he's removed from all status in the National Christian Council, removed from all status in the Methodist Church. And he's excommunicated along with Chiang Kai-shek and Zhou Meiling. Chiang Kai-shek and Zhou Meiling, of course, have come to Taiwan, where I'm speaking right now. Now, Chen Wenyuan in his later years was arrested in 1951, right before this denouncement is happening. And the reports are that he was imprisoned in Shanghai, but the date is uncertain. He was sentenced to about 5 years in prison. So some date his release in 1956, while others date it to 1959. But he returned to Chongqing later when he was allowed to leave because of ill health. And in his later years, he translated English and German works. And that's the end of his story. And so his fellow Methodist bishops, Ralph Ward and Jiang Tongtuan, who we looked at, died in 1958. But the man who denounced him, his son, reported that Chen Wenyuan forgave him because he said that he knew that he had to do that in the situation that he was facing. And on November 8th, 1968, Chen Wenyuan died in Chongqing from stomach cancer, and he was the last official Methodist bishop in China. And so he went from this incredibly influential, powerful figure to completely denounced and erased from public life. So, some conclusions. What can we learn from the life of Chen Wenyuan? The first is that his life reveals not only immense personal suffering, but also the inevitable suffering that his wife and five children must have faced as he was denounced in prison, as the freedoms began to be restricted in China. So that happened in 1951, where the religious freedoms really began to be restricted. Another conclusion that we learned from this is that he was an immensely talented individual. So he had degrees and experience from major universities. He was an expert in Christianity and Chinese religions, and he kept up on developments of these fields. And he had really amazing experience in organizational leadership as a pastor, a professor, university president, and head of a national organization, and a bishop. And all of that was squandered in the spring of 1951 when religious freedoms were restricted. The third conclusion is that the reasons put forth for why Chun was denounced in 51 were essentially because he was too closely connected to both American imperialists and the KMT. But that doesn't seem to be true because by 1955, when resistance to the CPP was no longer tolerated, religious leaders who had no connections to either American missionaries or political leaders, but just resisted joining the government-linked Three Self Movement Church were silenced as well. And I know that because of the work I wrote on this man, Wang Mingdao. Wang Mingdao, he had no connections to American missionaries or Chinese politicians, but by 1955, he himself was also branded a counter-revolutionary. So the issue really wasn't connection to the Americans. The issue really was the ideological control of the people that the CCP wanted to have over the Chinese population. And the final conclusion is that the denunciation of Chen Wenyuan by his fellow Methodist bishop, Ziti Kuang, is instructive on how people can be manipulated in a political context like China in the early 1950s. Because Ziti Kuang, or Jiang Changchuan, was the pastor of the Allen Memorial Methodist Church, and he baptized Chiang Kai-shek at a private ceremony. And he became not only Chiang Kai-shek's mentor, but he was also part of the North China Christian Union Group, which was an organization that the Japanese had founded during their invasion. And so Jiang Changchuan worked with the Japanese while they were invading them. And so he had a lot of political skeletons in his closet that he had to protect himself from. And so if he didn't offer Chen Wenyuan up, he himself would have been denounced. And this type of totalitarian political environment creates an eat or be eaten mentality in which people with political skeletons in their closets feel they need to protect themselves in order to survive by accepting moral compromises. And so finally, this is my last slide. The research for this paper and presentation was made possible through a postdoctoral fellowship from the Taiwan Foundation for Democracy, because there are organizations in the world, like the Taiwan Foundation for Democracy, that are interested in protecting religious freedom so that things like the Wesley Symposium in Canada can continue to happen. And so I'm really thankful for the opportunity to present this research today. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you.